So Craig, we've been talking about this kind of before we hit record, after we hit record, just a lot of talking about all things technical, all things working with developers as non-technical founders, as non-technical CEOs, whatever the title may be. You and I, we can't code. We've worked with programmers in varying capacities for years, and so we kind of understand at a high level what's going on. We can walk through sort of the stack and the different components and things like that. But like when it gets to actually getting in the code, I don't want to speak for you, but like I can't read code. I can say, okay, like I see this code as some documentation. But like that's really about where it ends. And running a SaaS company with that kind of handicap definitely makes things difficult. And there's a lot that you and I have talked about and that we're going to try to cover today just with those struggles. And I mean, on our side, the hiring process, I know you wrote a great blog post on that on the Castos blog. But the hiring process in general is like, I feel like that's not where we're struggling. A lot of it is just once we have a good candidate and kind of have extended the offer, whether it's W-2 or contract or whatever, it's getting them into the code and getting them to really understand what's going on and start being productive. And there's a lot to kind of unpack there. And for me, what it comes down to is that we're dealing with very messy code, complicated code that's touching a lot of different services, that is pulling data from dozens of places and then kind of manipulating it and then feeding it to something else and is spitting it out over here. And it's just very difficult for a new developer to kind of wrap their head around it. And so what that means is that Matt, who is kind of head of product, he started the company, he's the one that really wrote everything originally, he's got to spend a ton of time on the onboarding process, explaining things. But then when that's a major component, we have to be more aware of time zones. He's on Pacific, so that makes hiring in Eastern Europe and other places very difficult. He's also then has to balance that with moving the product forward on his own roadmap, as well as fighting any bugs that or any fires that come up. And a lot of times it's so hard to navigate that balancing act because it's not making us move faster in the short term. And even when we've kind of accepted that, it still seems like it's so hard to get to that point where like, all right, like we're now kind of in the clear. We've paid down that initial onboarding period, and like we have someone ramped up and they're really shipping fast, and it's just super hard for us to get there. I don't know what your experience has been like, but that's where we're feeling the most pain.
I know why a lot of, you know, successful seasoned multi-time founders have a technical co-founder, because like I can imagine how much easier, I know maybe nothing's easy, but I think it would be easier to have a technical co-founder to just own that side of things and kind of own the outcome, not just the doing, but like, I want to do this so that our customers have that, and like really own that whole kind of realm of responsibility. Even though like our developers, who I'm sure will listen to this podcast, are extremely responsible and really care about what we do. It's just like, you know, I work at 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night sometimes, and they don't, and I don't expect them to. And that's not what I'm asking, but like to have somebody who has real buy-in, I think would change the game there quite a bit for people like us who are non-technical founders. But I think that what you're talking about to me comes down to like, if you're trying to get down to like its root cause, is the balance between feature development and bug fixes / refactoring. Which is a balance that we always are adjusting or struggling with, and a matter of speed, you know, like how quickly can we get this feature out or this refactor done or this bug fixed? And for the latter, something that like we have learned a lot on, but I'll preface this with, I talked to our guys the other day and said, like, just so you know, like, I think we're doing a great job. But to be like really frank with you, like it is never enough, right? Like you can never ship code fast enough. Just like I can never sell enough stuff for our business.
Right.
So like, you're happy and everything seems good and that's cool, but like, my hair is still on fire over here. Like, I don't tell you, mm-hmm. right? Very often, but like, it always has to be faster, in my opinion. Because like, I feel like we work pretty calmly now, which is cool. But a lot of the work we've done, I feel like, to get there has been on my plate, frankly. And like, mm-hmm. work before they even hear about a feature, you know, or like scope out a bug or something. And like, overall, I don't know, like, as I'm saying this, I don't know if in terms of like people hours to a feature or a bug, if we're any faster, but it's just less time they have to spend on it, you know? So like, if we can package up a bug with like a GitHub issue and screencast and exactly the steps that people have to take to see this and like the user account that's seeing this bug and all of these things. And like, for a feature, now we have like a designer and a UX guy who also in a lot of cases writes the HTML and CSS, so that like, okay. he can basically scope it out, talk to me, we walk through like an interactive wireframe, and then when I say, yeah, this is how I want to look, he goes and codes it and then hands it to the R developers to you know, quote, just implement into the app or into our plugin. But like, I think both of these things, like this pre-work, has gone a long way to like, to having the time that the developers actually spend working on stuff be more productive. So I don't know how you guys deal with that stuff and if like that's something that you've worked on or kind of considered.
Yeah, the pre-work is something that honestly it varies. We don't have like a strong development process in place. It's something where we've been working towards that direction, but like, we're not at the calm place right now. And that's where a lot of our challenges come from, is that like, we've grown very quickly and we want to keep that momentum going. And there are features we know we need to add that like are holding us back significantly from where we want to be, that are impacting churn. And it's like, we need to keep moving there. And so it's just like, all right, like, Matt can either spec this out in a ton of detail, try to hand it off to another developer, and then probably have to spend a good amount of time answering questions and explaining it and checking things and code reviews and this and that, or Matt can just go do it himself. And so like, that's where we've struggled. And like, right now we were, after a lot of trial and error, we've been able to get someone in on the front end, basically rewrote a ton of it, but is now at a point where he can really understand how the code works, because I mean, for the most part, it's his code, but he gets how it touches kind of most of the other parts. And it's also clean enough that we could bring in someone more junior, which is kind of our ultimate plan. But for him, who doesn't have the kind of domain experience, expertise that Matt and I do in this space. So for him, I'll create the mockups in like Balsamic. I'll record a video kind of walking through it and just explaining how things should function. And that's worked well. And same with on our data collection side, it's just more straightforward. So those are things where we can kind of explain what we're trying to get for data, why we need it, how it should be formatted, that stuff. And so we've moved towards getting some lighter specs in place, and that's worked well. But there's still just a good chunk of the product that like, I frankly don't know if we'll ever be able to really hand it off. And I think that's okay. So when Matt and I are working together on things that touch kind of the core part of the product, and so to, I guess to catch people up, I run SaberSim, where we make software that helps people build strong lineups for daily fantasy sports. And so a major component of what we do is we simulate out games thousands of times using tons of data to create projections for the players in the games, for the games themselves. And then we have tools that people can use to kind of manipulate that data and build their lineups. And so the things that touch like the simulator are just like hyper complex. I'm confident someone else could understand it, but like I think there's the feature complete kind of horizon is close enough on that kind of stuff where like it's not worth trying. But yeah, we've really just kind of worked on getting things to a place where the developer can understand what we're trying to do. The part that we've struggled the most with is just the back end. The API is kind of a mess, but like the data itself is just not stored consistently. And people might understand what we're trying. The developer might understand what we're trying to build, but how to do that in the code gets very complicated very fast and just takes them. They either have to spend weeks and weeks kind of trying to wrap their head around it by saying, oh, this data is for some reason stored there, but it's in this form and I've got to convert it to this. Or for whatever reason, you guys converted it this way. And then it's like figuring out why we did that, because the logic of how we're manipulating the data is just in different pieces. And it's just like, it's just all over the place. And so it's either they spend a ton of time trying to figure it out, or Matt has to spend more time speccing it out to that level of detail where it's like he should just build it. And so for us, what we kind of have just accepted is that we're fortunately able to get someone in who could clean up the front end, really understand that, and get it to a spot where the kind of product, the light features, the stuff like that can move forward without Matt really doing anything other than answering a couple of questions here or there. But the back end, we've just accepted he needs to do some cleanup himself. Where it's just so far off, or it's much better now, but the times when we kept trying to bring someone into the back end, it was just so far off from a workable thing for a new developer to learn that like it was just taking way too much of his time. And so we've kind of just accept like, all right, after we get these next kind of features out, we're pausing the product and you just got to dig in there and clean it up so that someone can have a chance of understanding what's going on there.
Yeah. I mean, someone thought of us like this idea of like kind of easy wins when it comes to development, or especially new developers, that is really smart that you're doing is like, this is really sensitive or really complicated. And so like, don't try to bring somebody new into it. Just say like, and I think what you're kind of overall saying is like Matt's time is really valuable, right? So like let him spend his time on the most difficult, complicated stuff. And then like you're doing with this front end person is like, front end is front end. It's not overly technical. I think it's very difficult, but it's not like overly complex a lot of times. So like, probably an easier place to put somebody. So yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense that like that's a place you guys have landed.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been a very expensive process getting here.
Yeah.
But it's something where we're finally at the spot where like we can see the path forward to getting to that kind of saner pace where we have multiple developers moving the ball forward and we're able to move faster than we could before. And a lot of it too is just further specializing what each developer is doing. So it's bringing in, rather than getting someone full stack who could kind of understand all of it, we realized that was for where we were at, especially with Matt not being trained as an engineer without having a ton of management experience, let alone the time to actually manage. We knew we needed someone senior who could focus on one bit. So we brought in Brian on the front end. And on the back end, we've just kind of split it up even further. We have someone who that we're hiring right now, a couple of guys who their full-time jobs will be collecting data. And then someone who's been with us for a couple of years now, he's going to be the one that handles how do we clean that data and normalize that data and store it in a consistent way. And the goal really is just to get him, to get John to understand the data as much as Matt does, so that if things break, we have someone else to call and we can get some redundancy there. But it's just, it's just been kind of constantly just niching down what each person is doing. And it's I don't even know like what advice I would give myself when I first came on board to like avoid this, but it's just been a challenge.
One thing that I'd love to get your take on is you mentioned like you've had senior people and you're looking to bring a junior person in. I've heard, you know, a lot of people that I respect that are developers, you know, kind of say that like, for a young company, senior developers are, you know, quote, worth it, the difference that you have to pay somebody. And right now we're a senior and a junior developer, and we're in the hiring process for another senior developer. I'm trying to take that advice, but I didn't know, like, have you guys seen much difference between like that, like autonomy and somebody's ability to like come in and start contributing quickly as a junior developer, like versus a senior developer, or like the I hate to say the value that you get from those people, but like those different experience levels. I don't know. What have you seen there?
I think for us, a lot of it really just depends on what they've been working on. And it was much easier for us to bring someone on the data collection side of it because it doesn't need to touch it doesn't really touch the app. The app is going to interact with the data and things like that, but like, it's not, you don't need to understand as much of what's going on to get things to work. And so that was a spot where we brought in someone relatively senior, but not like a crazy amount of experience, and that worked. Wherever we've had the challenge of bringing someone in on the junior side is just when they get into the app and they get into kind of the legacy code and just trying to trace what's going on in the logic in there. And so for us, when we finally found Brian, who's a front-end consultant working with us, he did an audit kind of the front end and gave us a list of here are the things that I would work on, kind of ranked by priority. And then we just had him like tackle the first one and just to see what it was like working with him. And we've just accepted that like there's not going to be this person you can just plug in and like not have to manage them at all, not have to like work with them to get them to understand things. Like there's always going to be work.
Yeah, it's called a co-founder, right?
Yeah, right. But it's like he was the first developer really that got in there and like would ask a few questions, got what we were trying to do, get to work, and then like would just ask some clarifying questions along the way, but was as independent as we've ever had. And then like at that point, it was like, almost, and I hope Brian's not listening to this, but it's like, it doesn't matter what you charge within reason. Like we're going to pay that because like this, I'm sure we could find someone else. I mean, we pay him, it's over $100 an hour full time. This isn't like a long-term solution for us, but like if that lets us move forward on everything else that we're doing without having like, I don't like saying babysit because that's not how it is, but like without having to like actively, like without having to duplicate our efforts by having Matt in there every single hour on everything, then like that's worth it for us for the time being.
Yeah.
And as we're thinking about the junior side of it, the plan really is to get Brian down to probably like 40 hours a month on a retainer. So that if there's like kind of gnarlier bugs in there, things like that, he can get in there and move that forward. But where I think we could definitely get the value from him is having him onboard a junior developer who would be full-time at a much, much cheaper rate, who can kind of, now that the heavy lifting is really done and it's much easier to work with and everything and he understands it, that's where we can get some kind of like multiplicative value from his hourly by having him bring someone else in and kind of get up to speed. But senior, I think bringing someone in as truly senior is important, but it's just like, it's not as though like just having a senior label like means like, oh, this, they're going to solve all the problems. Like we've worked with other senior developers who weren't able to kind of get in as quickly. So it's still like, it's really just finding the right person kind of regardless of what that title may be. And the more experience they have, probably the easier it is for them to get up to speed. But like, it's still not like a simple thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of seeing that like Jonathan, our senior developer, is definitely been like mentoring and kind of helping level up our more junior guy, and looking at having, you know, three developers on the team soon. Will, you know, Jonathan will act like as team lead a lot to kind of help, you know, kind of streamline the development process, make sure everybody's doing the same stuff. So all writing in the same code editor, all trying to have the same code standards, doing pull requests and code reviews and all that kind of stuff the same way. And hopefully like him taking a little bit of time away from actually writing code will let, kind of like you and I do for the rest of the company, like unblock the other developers to be more efficient is the goal.
Was Jonathan your first technical hire?
Yeah. Yep.
So he's been there like since the beginning and I'm guessing like kind of built most, if not all of it kind of, or at least originally. And so at what point did you decide it was time to look at bringing in a junior developer, at least kind of considering that?
golly, it's been like 2 years. Like we were about a year into it, maybe. And I think part of it was like revenue was good enough to where we could afford it.
Right.
I can do marketing and I can do support, but I can't do development. So it's like, somebody we need to hire for. But I think it honestly goes back to this, like, it's never fast enough and good enough and pretty enough. And like, and that's why I feel right now is like, we just need more manpower, you know, like we need more development hours in the app. And that's even like, you know, being a relatively mature tool, like I can't imagine going back and doing it from scratch with, I mean, Jonathan was working part-time for a while and it, like everything took forever, you know? And like now we're two full-time plus some part-time contractors and a designer that gets everything teed up for them and everything. It's like, man, we did things the hard way at the beginning.
when you hired the junior developer, like how long did it take you to see, like how long did it take him to kind of, or her to get up to speed? And like start really contributing? And was it something where Jonathan was, I guess, what was his like role in the onboarding process too?
Yeah. So we kind of like backed into it, which is very different than we'll do this time, but we had a specific thing we wanted to hire a developer for at that time. And it was to build like an admin panel. So for us to be able to go in and like cancel users and impersonate a user to go into their account and stuff. And so that's what we hired Danilo for. And, you know, from there kind of started giving him smaller tasks on an ongoing basis. And then, you know, to, you know, part-time consistently and then to full-time. But I think it helps. And even now, like we're giving like a test project to somebody, like some kind of discrete thing. And like, I think when this new person we're hiring comes on board, we'll have like, this is the thing you're going to work on for the first week and for the first month, to try to, you know, they got to get set up on the app and get it running on their local machine and understand Git and all that kind of crap. But like, if I onboard a developer, like I do a marketing person, you got to just like, I got to think that like, they can't just get in there and get lost, you know, 'cause like, it's so overwhelming, that if you go in and say, here's our app and it's whatever, this huge big old app, you know, that has a bunch of little microservices and all this crap, that like, I'm sure they just get in and be like, what the fuck is going on, you know? Yeah. So like, I think we're gonna try to say like, okay, we want to create this thing and it's small and kind of contained, and hopefully it doesn't interact with a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, so I guess that's a little what we did in the past and what our plan is going forward. Just so like, yeah, somebody can kind of come in and feel productive themselves, you know, and me feel good about them contributing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Like, what have you guys done? Like,
that's where, again, like there's been hits and misses where it's because you want to have something that's like discrete enough where they don't need to understand the entire code base to be able to work on it. But it can't be so far removed that like you're not actually seeing if they're able to understand things. And that's kind of where, when we were really hiring on backend, where we were struggling is just like, we can like, okay, like design a new kind of API and they can get theoretical and you can see how they think and kind of the engineering concepts and how they work with it. But like, then it's like, okay, like implement this small piece of that in the code. Then it's like, all bets are off because then you're actually kind of going from theory to practice. But like the back end is really where we've had the biggest challenge of figuring out what those like discrete projects are that kind of balance both sides of it. Whereas like on the front end, I mean, a lot of times like with just some more, if someone, in our experience, when someone was senior enough, if there was some kind of more upfront onboarding work, if we made Matt available for like a day or two in the very beginning and then kind of as needed ongoing, like they could get in and be productive really quickly. On the data collection, it's isolated enough for like, that's fine too. It's just been like the back end, and we're still kind of like trying to figure out what that looks like, because yeah, it's just saying, okay, I get that they can code well, I get that they know how to think about this, I all that, but it's just like, what about with our code, which is in kind of a messed up place? And so we've just again just kind of gone back to like, I don't think there is something without wanting to, like, if we were in that calm place, where we could say, all right, like, Matt's going to spend half of his time working with a new developer, or even a quarter of his time consistently working with this new developer. I'm sure we could get someone in there on the back end to figure things out. But, like, that's where it comes back to prioritization, which you and I were talking about a little bit before we started recording, of, like, at a certain point, it's like, what kind of refactoring is necessary? Like, is it worth it for us to kind of pay down this technical debt now if it means we're going to move slower on the product? And that's where we've kind of gotten stuck a few times, of just saying, like, it's not worth it right now. And we're at the spot right now where it's just like, it's not worth trying again until we get things cleaned up a bit more on our own before the next shot. So that's kind of where we're at there.
Have you read the Shape Up book the Basecamp folks wrote?
No, but I feel like everyone is talking about that. And I get the kind of idea behind it. I just always, like, I just feel like right now, it's funny because, like, I'm like a natural, like, type A process driven person. And, like, I want to have process, like, not everywhere, but, like, I just feel like if you're not thinking about how you're working, you're not nearly as effective as you could be, just point blank. But there's varying degrees of what goes into that. But, like, I just still feel like we're in such a frantic place where, like, we want to just capitalize on this fast growth, and, like, things do change very quickly, that, like, I don't want us to be too limited by kind of structure like that. But there's got to be some middle ground, and like, right now we're too far to the unstructured side. But I feel like Shape Up, or even just like a true kind of Scrum or Agile or whatever, like by the letter process, is like also too much for us on the other side. So that's kind of where we're at. But it's probably also me just like making some excuses about that too.
Yeah. No. I mean, I like, so we follow it kind of loosely. And only like to an extent, you know, like, I think that like Basecamp has the opportunity, to be really opinionated and rigid about a lot of things because they're Basecamp and they have, you know, millions of dollars in the bank, literally, you know? And so they can just say like, fuck off. Like, I don't care. We're just not going to do that for 6 months.
Right.
And we don't, right? So like, I think what we do is we do follow the like 6 weeks on, 2 weeks off thing. And in the 2 weeks off, we try to shape what the next features and development cycle will look like. And we have a single meeting. And we don't even always have a meeting. Sometimes it's just me saying, like, we're going to build this, and I know this is going to take all 6 weeks, so we don't need to have a meeting about it. But, like, we just recently had a meeting, and we basically say, like, I have a list of things I want to do, and can we do, you know, how many of these 10 things can we do in the next 6 weeks? And that's basically it. So, like, the thing that I like about it is it gives me a chance to kind of express in an organized way, like, the mountain of work that we could do, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we, you know, I want to build 10 features this. We do all this in Notion.
Okay.
But you could do it in Trello. We just have a Kanban board in Notion. And so we have a board for every on and every off cycle. And so, yeah, so it gives me a chance to say, like, this is the stuff I want to do, you know, because, like, I think they need to see that. And then they say, like, well, we can only do the top half of this or whatever. But it also gives, like, everybody a voice of, like, you know, support wants this and marketing wants that and I want this and development needs time to upgrade us to the latest Laravel version because we're two versions behind now and all this kind of stuff. And like, I feel like that, just that, like, just that time to talk about this stuff, you know, is kind of healthy. But then that's it. And then everything changes anyhow, right? Like the day after we do that, it all changes. But, but I almost feel like just saying like, okay, we know this is going to change. We also know that, and I don't know what your percentage is on this, but that is only like 70% of our time. You know, the other 30% is bug fixes.
I would pay a lot of money to have 70% of our time spent.
Okay, maybe I'm optimistic. I don't know.
No. I think you guys are just at a slightly different spot than us. But like truly, like that would be the goal for us, is getting to that.
Yeah. And maybe I'm optimistic. I don't know. But I mean, I would put like refactoring and like UI improvements in the feature category, you know, not like bugs are like this thing is broken, or support is like customer can't figure it out and I can't figure it out and Eileen can't figure out what's going on. So like a developer has to go in and log into someone's site or something.
Do you, so this is, I want to get back to kind of the prioritization, because I think I do think similarly, just without as much structure. But what I just want to ask though is like, when there is a bug that comes in, what is kind of the triage process from your support team to the developers? And like, is there a specific developer that like handles bugs, or is it just whoever's available, or like what happens there?
I hate being the one to answer these questions. I feel like we're so bad at it. But so yeah, what happens is we have so Eileen is our support person. She does a great job. She has a lot of experience like in WordPress. And so she kind of answers a lot of our tickets, almost all of our tickets. And if she sees something that she can't fix, a lot of times if she thinks it's just kind of like a UX issue or a podcasting issue, not like a technical problem, she'll come to me. Okay. If it's like a, hey, this thing is just broken, she'll just go straight to a developer. So in Help Scout, we used to have teams in Help Scout, but that like went away somehow. Like I think we got on a plan that had teams that they realized that we weren't supposed to be on or something. So we had like a development team in Help Scout, and she would just assign it to that team, and those guys would go in every day and look at their Help Scout assigned tickets and tackle those. And the way that they and she would kind of assign those is pretty much like, you know, between Jonathan and Danilo, they each have kind of championed a feature or a part of the product. And okay. So, you know, if it's analytics, it goes to Danilo. If it's WordPress, it goes to Jonathan. If it's, you know, republished into YouTube, it goes to Danilo, just because he built, you know, they each kind of built those things. Yeah, so that's how it works, I guess. Like, she's frontline, I'm second tier for not really technical things, I guess, but like user things. And then if it's like a legit code level bug, it goes straight to the developer. They investigate it, typically can resolve it, and if not, they create a GitHub issue about it and try to get it fixed, you know, whenever.
Yeah, because that's something where right now it's like literally like, okay, I've gotten a lot better at like trying to figure out what, because so I guess on like a technical side, it's like the way lineups are built for fantasy sports, it's like there are restrictions in place on like what a valid lineup is. And sometimes like users can put in settings that don't produce enough valid lineups, or just like mess with things in a way where like it's not intuitive. And like you can't's too strong, but like it would be incredibly challenging to try to like, we have bumpers in place that prevent the obvious things from like happening, but there's still just like so many permutations that can impact this that there's not like an easy way to always prevent these things from happening. So like I've gotten pretty good at like diagnosing when those things are happening, so I don't have to like bother Matt to look into it, but like there are still a ton of bugs that come up where it's like, all right, like Matt's gonna have to look into this. And then I've just had to get better at just saying like, sorry, like we'll look into this like next week. If that's like, and if there's been like, if this person's had a few issues, like I'll just give them a credit. And that's kind of like my way in my head to just like not feel bad about it. And things like that. But like, I think what we're going to do is when we do look at this junior front end developer, the goal would be obviously to have them kind of, I have like a wildly long list of like UI and UX fixes that I want to have made to the products, like have them work through that, have them work like other real priorities. But like, I want them to be the one that's able to get in there and debug this kind of stuff so that it can again take those things off of Matt's plate so that we can just focus on kind of the highest value stuff for him. But it's, yeah, right now, like the triage is like, if I can't figure it out, I just ping Matt and then, or just like refund the customer. I'm like, ah, sorry guys.
Yeah. It's
not exactly like an ideal setup for now, but we're getting there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's not that far from what we do, but if I think about, and this is where I get like insecure, if I think about like, Zendesk, right? Or Help Scout or whatever, Basecamp. Like the thing I think that sets those folks apart is that they have taken the time to document everything so that anyone can come in, and there literally is a process and documentation and troubleshooting steps for everything that will happen. Because like that, I agree. I mean, that's the thing is like, I would love to like close the Help Scout tab in Chrome sometime, you know, and just like not have it always there and not get pinged about stuff. But right now it's not realistic. And I think part of it is my fault that I haven't done a good enough job like enabling Eileen to answer every question that I can answer, you know, because like there's it's my problem that like if the knowledge is in my head and not quote on paper somewhere, that that's my fault, you know. And I think that applies to developers enabling you or a support person too. Like I think, I don't know how it came up, but like I've asked both Jonathan and Danilo for like troubleshooting steps or guides to like, as you're going into this thing, what do you do to look at this so that we don't have to bug you all the time, you know? And like, that's not perfect, but, and I think it's a little bit of each of us. Like I've gone and said, I don't want to have to do this. And they've gone to me and said, you've asked me the same question six times this week. Like, here's how you can figure it out.
That's so what like, we've done a lot of too. Yeah.
It's, yeah. How do you guys manage that? Cause that's something we suck at.
We have like, I don't know. People love Notion. I think it's better than Trello in ways, and other ways it's not. But like, yeah, great. I can have everything we ever want in this one place. But like, I'm sure I'm not utilizing it the right way or this and that. Like, it's kind of a mess. But like, we have like one workspace that's like our internal KB. And like, whenever I ask them, like a developer a question, like, how do I do this? How do I do that? Like, I'll create just like a page, I guess it's called, in there that kind of like documents the process. So things like deleting a user account, like how do I go into restore that stuff in Firebase? Like how do I go in there to delete that? Like how do I check this? How do I check that? I'll create things in Notion for that. And I feel like, yeah, there's where we struggle again. It's just like, we could have better documentation, but right now, again, like on support right now, it's just me. That will probably be a hire. I think I post like for part-time support help in the next couple of weeks. And then I'll have to like really see how good our documentation is. But it's just, yeah, there's just so many small, like actual bugs where it's like, no, you're not doing anything wrong. Like that's just broken. And then it's just like our triage is like, do we fix this now or not? And like, when we're now at like the default alive stage, it's easier for me to mentally be like, okay, this is like, we're just not going to fix this right now. But I still struggle with it. Where like, it's one thing for, I'm much better with it for feature requests. It still sucks when the same feature requests come in week after week and you're just like, ah, it's a few months away. Like, it's just, I don't like saying that, but like, I can at least be more realistic of like, yeah, it's not coming immediately, but it's on a roadmap. But like where I have struggles, like, no, like this is actually like, it's not something's missing. It's like, this doesn't work right. And then it's like at a certain point, like the squeaky wheel does get the grease. Like if someone is just like bugging the shit out of me in support, I'm probably going to be like, Matt, can you just get this fixed? Like, I get that this is not like a plus EV, like this doesn't have a positive ROI to it, but like, just fix this so I can stop like hearing from this person. But it's like when the things are broken, that's just much harder for me to be like, ah, like we'll deal with it later. Even though like from a purely like ROI standpoint, we probably should put some of those things off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's the balance, man. Right. Cause like if you fix all the bugs, then you never make new features. So you'll have a couple of happy customers. Right. But like, I think you have to, and I think the guidance I got from Rob as we were going through this in Tiny Seed was like, if it's mission critical, like the core of the app doesn't work,
right,
then you got to fix it. And if it's not, or if it doesn't affect everybody, then, you know, to some degree it can wait. And that's just a more subjective decision. Yeah. So I would love to talk, like, we have a whole other episode about, like, testing, unit testing, and, like, user acceptance testing, and, like, how we have all that stuff set up. We've come a long way there and totally screwed up at the beginning. But I'd love to dig in more there. I mean, I think for me, the lesson with this is, I hope, first of all, it doesn't come off as, like, us bashing our developers, because I'm sure you feel the same way I do, is that ours are amazing, and we would not be here where we are without them. But I think they feel the same way that we do, that, like, it's hard for us to give them and them to understand and them to feel enabled and kind of, like, powerful to be successful at their jobs. And, like, the further we can get along that continuum, the better everybody feels. But it's just hard, you know? And I think that the fact that we struggle with this and feel bad about it for them and for ourselves and for the company is a healthy thing for us to be aware of. Yeah, but I don't think we'll ever be done with it, you know?
No, not at all. I mean, I think that's kind of ultimately, like, what I'm trying to do is, obviously I want things to move. I'm with you. Like, I wanted them to move as quickly as possible. And the more friction, the more technical debt, slowing things down, the more bugs, whatever it is, like, that's bad and slows things down. But, like, also it's just, like, it's not healthy for even taking effectiveness off the table. Like, people shouldn't, like, just be constantly getting pulled in 100 different directions. And, like, we're at that spot now where, like, we're getting better about it, but, like, we just have to be more deliberate about how we're working, about who's working on what, paying down some of the technical debt that has a high interest rate that keeps causing more and more problems. And it's just, there's a ton to navigate there. And I think, it's just, it kind of comes with the territory of running a technical company, is that whether you're technical or not, you're going to have to navigate these issues. And I think it's the having a technical co-founder on board. Again, like you said, it doesn't make it easy, but just having someone who could kind of have some domain expertise and just own that. Wow, that's valuable. but
next time, maybe, right?
Kinda, yeah, exactly. we're just kind of doing our best here. And I think sharing some of these frustrations, hopefully it's interesting. People have suggestions for us. I'm sure there's a lot of things we can improve on. So don't hesitate to share those. But yeah, hopefully I agree with you, Craig, that we didn't want to just vent or anything like that, because I think for us, we're almost more frustrated with ourselves of there's so much more we know we need to do, but we just don't necessarily have the skills to do it. So it's just constantly trying to level up, constantly trying to do our best to manage people that have skills that we don't. And that's just kind of comes to the territory of being a founder, of being a CEO.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, for folks that have, like, suggestions, questions, clarifications, or ideas for us, shoot us a message, seekingscale.com. Go shoot us a message there.
Ooh, we got the .com too.
Yeah, seekingscale.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, no, this was fun. And again, we're still kind of working on the voice of this, how we're structuring things. We're going to keep it somewhat casual. We still want the information here to be valuable, or at least insightful in some way, even if it's just looking at what we're doing and saying, what the hell are those guys doing? They have no idea what they're doing. If that's all you get out of it, great. But if you have any suggestions for how we could kind of structure things, topics you want us to cover, again, don't hesitate to reach out. We'd really appreciate that.